This is the Roaring Elephant Podcast. And here I am with my... Let's see, what is he this week? He is someone that we have visited many times before, and we are visiting once more. It's my co-host, Jon. Hello, Jon.
Oh, it was Santa Claus. Oh, no, Santa Claus visits you. You don't visit him. Okay, fair enough.
I mean, you could go to the North Pole. You could visit his toy store, factory.
He makes his stuff. Yeah, it's a shop. It's not a factory. And actually, I would say Christmas in summer would be a better thing. I think the Southern Hemisphere has a way better thing of it than we do with all the cold and the snow. There's snow anyway. But let's not waffle on, as somebody wise just said before we pressed the record button.
Hey, it's some the intro. These we always waffle during the intros.
it's called a trademark now, right?
Pretty much.
We are talking about the 2025 State of Open Source Report, which was submitted a while ago by OpenLogic and some other partners in there. If you want it, look on the internet. You can download it for free. And we're going to spend some time going over it, as we have done the last couple of years as well.
Indeed.
And any remarks about the survey itself, maybe to start?
I know that you have one, so let's start with that.
Was that a leading question? Yes, sir, it was. I mean, on the one hand, I'm very happy that OpenLogic does actually give that information, who they survey, where they came from, and things like that. But also a bit taken aback that open source, it's kind of something that's well known, used by millions and millions and millions of people. OpenLogic has been doing this for a long time too, so you'd think they can actually build upon past experience and get more of an audience answering these questions. But this survey received 433 responses from individuals all over the world, predominantly this time from Europe, which means that 31% came from Europe, 28% from North America, and then Asia, Africa, Latin America, United Kingdom, special mention there, don't know why, Middle East, Oceania having smaller numbers. I mean, the spread is pretty good. I think it's 50-50 Europe, 30% Europe, 30% North America, 30% rest of the world, which is kind of what IT looks like. But having 433 responses only, it sounds a bit low. Can you really make statistical valid deductions on a sample size of 433?
I mean, I guess we'll find out because we're about to go through the details. But I do agree. Like, it does feel like a very low number. And like this is not just done by Perforce. Like, it's also like the Eclipse Foundation is involved. Yeah. The Open Source Initiative is involved, and it just. I agree. Like, it just feels like a very, it's a strangely small number, but is what it is.
Previous years had more respondents, because I think if the previous years also had this lower number, I would have also commented on it, and I don't remember commenting on it, so it must have been a higher number. Maybe open source has lost its sex appeal.
Or maybe people are too busy using open source to comment on open source.
Or
answer surveys about open source.
Having problems with using open source, which is what this report
is actually
about.
We will get to that. I think the other comment that I think you identified was that the window for this is September 17th through December 20th, 2024. So the world has changed quite a bit over the last, 7+ months as we record this. You can draw your own conclusions as to what we are inferring by that. Mm-hmm. But, none of those things will be factored into, any of the results here. So maybe the 2026 survey will look very different.
I would expect so. I mean, I looked up the date specifically because when I saw that Europe had a larger representation than North America, which is typically not how it works, I was thinking, hey, maybe recent things are having an effect here. But no, this came before the one that must not be named.
Yep.
had an effect on the world. So, but yeah. apart from that, not much difference from last year. The technology is the highest part of respondents. Research is in there, education is in there, banking, finance, nothing majorly strange or noteworthy there, I think. So we can move on to what's the next one you want to talk about? We're not going to go through every single slide anything here. We're just going to get this big stuff we like.
I think that the next one that I would call out at least is like the respondents, like the job title of the respondents, because who responds, obviously, especially when you've got just a small audience or small pool, is going to skew the results. So, you know, 31% of respondents are developers or engineers, and the next highest group is 13% as system administrators. So, you know, think about that when you're sort of looking at the responses. You know, there's a huge kind of swathe of the responses here that are coming from developers and engineers, which I'm not saying this is a bad thing by any stretch of the imagination, but I do think it does shift the way that some of the responses kind of net out.
I mean, any survey has bias, and this one is no different from that. I kind of like the fact that the bias here towards practitioners and not people that are, maybe, let's hope practitioners are less hype sensitive because they know they actually have to do it in the end. That being said, it's not that
clear. It depends on the questions that you're asking. If you're asking questions around, like, what is the business value of you doing something, engineers aren't necessarily going to have the most accurate or the most the answers that maybe the business is actually thinking about, which I think does come up, and we'll talk about this later. Whereas if you're asking, like, what libraries are you using? Well, engineers are absolutely going to have the best answers for that. So again, like, it's not a good thing. It's not a bad thing. It's just a bias in the data to be aware of.
Apart from that, they have questioned organizations from all kinds of sizes, from 1 to 20 employees, which is 30% of the respondents, up to 100.
But then the next highest group is orgs of over 1,000. Over 5,000 people. So
20%.
A good blend of.
So even though it's a low amount of respondents, it is a qualified sample, let's say. So for me, when I asked the question, I was going to answer it myself, but you took it away from me. It is a small sample size, but I do think it has some representative value because it's not just somebody on the street with a clipboard clamping up random people. It's actual people that should have a decent opinion on the questions asked.
Indeed. All right. What's next?
I don't know. You have the report in front of you too, I hope.
I do. But what jumps out next to you? All right, I'll go first then. The next one for me is fantastic news. I love open source. I have done for, turns out, over 30 years, apparently. The sort of thing here is about the fact that usage of open source is still growing very significantly across, you know, the majority of these organizations. So 96% of organizations surveyed either increased or maintained their use of open source. And I think that's great news. I love the fact that more organizations are getting deeper into using open source software. I think it's a fantastic way to develop software. I think it ends up in higher quality software. I think it's good news all around.
It is good news, definitely. We'll see if the reasons behind this are good or bad, and then the rest of the slides we're looking
at. That's a different point, yes.
But I also took our little slide deck I made last year, where we compared the 2023-24 numbers and now with the 2025 numbers. And while it's still growing, usage is still expanding, growth is slowing down. If you look at 2022, if you look at the significantly increased usage and increasing usage together in 2022, that was 76%. In 2023, 79%. 2024, 77%, and now it's 56, 57-ish. So it looks like a lot of investment has been done in open source the last couple of years, and people are, which is a good thing, happy about it, and now we're maintaining the status quo. You can't expect people to keep adding new stuff. At some point, you have what you need, and you maybe replace something, but you should always strive to a stable environment. So I'm not surprised by the numbers. I think the last 3 years was a huge increase because open source in the last 5 years, I'd say, it's finally became respectable, if I can call it that. It was no longer, even if you were suggested using an open source product, you were no longer laughed out of the room. So investment came up. And now, and that's also why the block with it remained the same has become bigger now, because it was 21% 22, 18 2023, 27 2024, and now 38 in 2025. So it looks like a good evolution where investment happens, and now kind of plateau, hockey stickish plateaus now, and things get stabilized again. What next year is going to look like? Well, with this current economic climate, I'm actually very curious, because I would not want to try even predict, because I have ideas it could go up because, or it could go down dramatically because, both ways are even possible at this point.
The other interesting thing about the use of organizations like of open source increasing or decreasing is, and again, this could very much be survey audience bias, but if you look at 2022, it was like, in terms of organizations that reduced their use of open source, it was only 1.6%. 2023, it was 1.49%. Then 2024, it was nearly 5.5%. And now come to 2025, it's back down, but it's only down to 3.8%, so nearly 4%. So, you know, take of that what you, it's still a very, very small size slice of the pie of organizations that are reducing their use of open source. But is it weird that it was 2022, 2023, that it was so low?
I think it's understandable, because again, 2022, 2023, people were investing, they were looking at new things, sky was the limit, let's try stuff out. And after 1 or 2 years, some things pan out and some things don't pan out, and you will automatically get a bit of reduction. And now that we see that the bump has slowed down a bit from 5.5 to 3.8, it means that, well, the, I mean, fail quick, fail early, that's how you do good IT projects. So that kind of looks like what it is. I do, however, think that the bias from more European respondents this year versus previous years will have a play in here, because Americans has often been more adventurous, if you like, venture capitalism, just go for it and see if it works or not, see if it sticks on the to the wall, while Europeans are a bit more, risk averse, reserved, whatever. So I would actually think that if the respondents would still be more prominently US-based, I think the reduction percentage would have been higher, because more things, I mean, only 2 years, 1 year to stop a project is pretty quick. Yes, a lot of them should, but I would expect it to be closer to the 5%. And again, that's not a bad thing. You should, you can only know what works by trying stuff, and lessons learned from things that didn't work are still very valuable lessons. And that's one of the good things for open source. You can try something without a lot of risk or financial investment involved. You can just see if something makes your life, your person, your organization, whatever better. And if it does, great. And if it doesn't, you learn something that didn't work, which is very important.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So we've been dancing around this next one a little bit. let's dive on in. So the next one is why organizations are choosing open source software.
By a landslide.
And like, welcome to the third episode over the course of the Roaring Elephant podcast, at least the third episode, where we've probably like grumbled about this a little bit, or at least shaken our fist at it. The number one is no license cost. But then it does say, comma, overall cost reduction. Now,
because you don't have to pay a license.
Well,
replacing maybe Oracle by MySQL, bad idea, by the way, will have a cost reduction involved.
Yeah. I mean, the reason why, for anyone that hasn't listened to the previous two episodes where we've covered the OpenLogic State of Open Source report before, I think there's an old saying that goes something along the lines of, open source is only free if you don't value your time. It's a little bit on the harsh side, perhaps, but if you are, adopting something, replacing a bit of proprietary software that comes with a license and a support agreement and all this other kind of stuff, and you're replacing it purely with open source software you downloaded off the internet, there is a cost to that. Okay, you might not be paying a license fee. The license is the GPL or something else, but you might not be paying a fee for that, but you are going to have to maintain and support that somehow. Like, someone is going to have to put the work in downloading and installing the updates and that sort of thing. And this in total absolutely could still end up being cheaper than, paying for the license fee and the support cost for the piece of proprietary software that you're replacing. Absolutely. But I still regularly see and hear people kind of talking about this and definitely missing the TCO or total cost of operation, total cost of ownership, however you want to phrase it, when you're using open source software. And I'm not saying this is a bad thing, because I think actually there's a lot of positives for it. Like, people learn a lot when they're using it, all these kind of things. There's a lot of benefits to it. You have greater control over the software that you're using, all this kind of stuff. But the fact is that because a lot of people, because that no license cost is like the front runner there, and overall cost reduction is the secondary point, it still triggers me a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I was always, when I was still a DevOps engineer, I loved it when some open source tool came in, because that meant I could get my fingers in it and start playing and learning and evolving and things like that. With a closed source product, you just buy it, you use it, and you weren't allowed to go into it. So that was a good thing. I don't think, however, that here in this report, this is a good sign, because I put CapEx versus OPEX in the notes earlier. And basically what I mean is, I think a lot of people in the current economic climate, or at those days even, are looking at what's it costing me now and not looking at what's going to cost me over the next 5 years. Because when you talk about you need people and stuff like that, that's a long-term cost. And it's the same thing with all kinds of outsourcing and going to cloud and things like that. For some reason, businesses no longer invest in the long term. It's all short-term stuff. And okay, I can see why, because 5 to 10 year plans don't work. We know that waterfall is bad, agile is better if you want to talk about the development. But at some point, definitely for things like this, if you base your solution on an open source solution or a closed source solution, that is a decision you will live with for at least, multiple years. This is not something quick and easy. This is foundational stuff. And only looking at immediate costs and not looking at the accumulation of cost over time, because as we'll see in other slides, maintaining open source software, patching it, getting the knowledge about it, getting people to can actually work it correctly is a big factor of it. And that's, I think, especially because it changed here, because in 2023, it was only it was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, the 10th reasons almost to go for open source. In last year, it was for the first time ever, the first reason at 36%, with the second one being able to improve development velocity being 30%. This year, no license cost is 53%. And the second the second one is reduce vendor lock-in, which basically is the same thing as license costs at 32%. And then the first really good one, which I would say, open standards interoperability, only at 27%. Now, these are not cumulative. People could tag multiple options here. But the fact that license cost is so high now, as I said, a landslide above the rest, I don't think that's a good thing. Because a lot of, I mean, don't forget that a lot of times this happens, that somebody higher up says, we're going to do open source, we're going to reduce our costs, but they don't hire new people. They just expect the people that maybe have no background in open source to just be able to run with this. And that's how businesses fail.
And like this thread will come up in multiple other areas that we're going to touch on a little bit further on. But I think for now, we're going to have to pause our coverage there, as I think we've pretty much run out of time.
We have used up all our allotted open source for today. You can support this podcast by becoming a patron. Contributions help us. And you can go to our website for more information, podcast, and a backlog of our episodes. You can send your feedback by email to podcast@organize.org. Let us know what you think of us, and we will definitely take that into account. Until next time, my name is Nobody Can Pay For My License, Jon.
And my name is Third Time's a Charm, Dave.
Scary. We look forward to talk to you again next week. Goodbye.
See you then.